This is March the 28th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska, and this is a visit of Ben Falls, early day miner and old timer here in Fairbanks. And Ben is 83 years old and still mining, and he's going to just reminisce a little bit here. Can you just go ahead and talk, Ben?
Well, what would you like me to speak about, Harry?
Well, just like he was asking you this
question. Oh, I see. Well,
he asked you about your mining.
Oh, yes. You was asking me about how much of a cleanup I'd made. The biggest one, oh, that's about $17,000. I never did leave too much in the boxes for any length of time because it was risky sometimes, especially in the late fall at dark nights. And if you didn't have a good dog to bark away, you might lose the cleanup because most...
Well, was that the time you brought it in to Nordale and left it up on the counter for me?
Well, no, I...
That was another time.
That was some... That was after that time.
Mm-hmm.
I've had... I've had 17,000, but about the biggest I could account for anyway, but usually take it up before it gets that big.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I want to store that at home, why then I start in and sluice again and take it up again sooner or later. It looks like it ought to be taken. Sometimes the rippers used to pack too hard, and I had a great deal of picking and loosening up the rippers, and I thought it better just clean them up and take the gold out and let it get the rippers a nice free chance to catch the gold for a while again, because this year talc and clay that that is in the placer mining, it causes a hard pack, or what they call a hard pan. And you have to sharpen pick real sharp and pick your riffles every day or loosen them up a little bit and so the gold can get down in them. But I don't have that trouble anymore. I use a Hungarian riffle and put the riffles upstream against the current, and that agitates the sheer sediment out.
Yeah. Right
out. And I don't have any trouble. That gold gets down. And in fact, it'll get down so much that you can't even see it when you turn the water off. But if you don't use that kind of a riffle, why, it probably lay a lot of it lay up on top. And if you crowd the box too heavy, you could slide that gold along, and it would get out on you.
Now, you was telling us other formations that you have over there. Did you have a clay ball up and roll through your box and take the gold out with it?
Well, I never had any. That's what they call a gumbo that sometimes has comes along in the bedrock. Even the bulldozer blade gets a hold of that. And you just put it right up there and let it go through the boxes anyhow.
It makes balls in it, and it'll pick up some of the gold.
It'll roll up in balls, but I have failed to find anything in it, and I've oftentimes thought, well, they tell me so much about it that it's a gold robber, but I never found a color in it or hardly anything worthwhile. It doesn't seem to catch anything. Not going through water, but if you was to tramp on it or something like that, it would set into the gold, and maybe then it would roll up and the gold might stick to it if you squashed it in far enough, like it would be a dough of bread when you're netting it.
How about the magnetite and the tin and the other elements?
We use no magnetic process of trying to catch the gold that way. It's not necessary for that, except when you clean your gold out in the pan after you dry it and flip it. And you put the magnet in there, and it lifts all the iron. And you pick that out, and then you can pan more, or you can flip it and blow it and clean it up pretty quick that way. But when you got a lot of gold to clean up, we usually spread a newspaper on the table and get your pan there and take so much in the pan, not too much, and you can flip it, you know, in such a way, I guess, that I'd have to demonstrate that in order for to...
Well, I've seen it done.
You've seen it done. Well, mm-hmm. It's not very easy to do. Not all people can do it. I've had some people come and ask me if they'd come over and clean their gold for them, and I see them, they had a lot of black sand and stuff in the gold that they couldn't get out very quick, and they asked me if I'd take it out for them. Well, I'd just go along and take the pan and flip it for them, and get a handful out of every little flip or two. And
that's one of the things you got to learn.
Flip it out of the pan, and there's not a color in it, but pass it over to them, and just go ahead and try it yourself now. And
How about tin?
Seems like they don't get on to it very good.
How about the tin?
The tin? You know, I haven't had any tin in the boxes.
Not where you're mining?
No.
How about garnet?
I've never had any tin. I've had a lot of antimony and a lot of sulfides of iron and, some quite a bit of cinnabar in our creek over there, but it's all heavy stuff and it stays with the gold pretty much.
The cinnabar does too?
But yes, but you can easily take the cinnabar out by burning it. Mm-hmm. You just set the pan in the stove where there's good fire on it and it'll soon fume off, or at least mm-hmm. it'll just melt off and there's nothing to that. Of course, if there's any mercury in it, it'll fume off too. It'll smoke off. Otherwise, if you want to burn your gold in a retort, why, you'll catch all that mercury over again. But it doesn't amount to very much if it's just the cinnabar rock that's in with the gold. But it's heavy, and it stays in the pan, you know, with the gold, and it's hard to clean if you don't burn it. Well, if there's any sulfide of iron, it'll burn too. It'll smoke off too, and everything else gets lighter. And anything that will stay in the pan is probably a lead bullet. And that you probably pretty near got to pick it out. You can't magnet won't pick it up, and the magnet won't pick copper up or anything like tin. I don't pick that up. There's nothing else much more in the placer.
Tin ore is non-magnetic until it's been treated and made into tin.
That's right. I think nickel's non-magnetic.
Nickel is also.
Until you burn it.
That's right.
Yes.
Ben, over in your district there, you've worked the placer ground down in the valleys and the lower flats, but have you ever prospected along the hills for hard rock?
I have some hard rock that I've uncovered over there. In fact, I've been sluicing that soft stuff that is usually on the top.
Does it have a good show?
And it shows up pretty good. I've had that stuff in the boxes, and it's just half rock.
It's half eroded.
Yeah, it's all crumbled up in small crumbles of rock, you just have to clean that up and send that to the mint and melt it that way.
Well, now, what kind of formations of geological formations do you find out in your particular area? Do you find a bull quartz or rose quartz or?
I found the white quartz that you have. I've found the gold right in with that, and I've also found this brown rock. It's almost like liver ore, like zinc ore. Zinc ore is very dark, but this is. I can't see that very.
That's
good.
A piece of ore from Pedro.
Yeah, that's.
That's got some in it.
That's heavy.
That come discovery claim up there.
Yes.
It's a sample I saved.
I see. Yes. Well, you know them. Nearly all rocks are tarnished so bad. They're tarnished so much that they all look alike, you know, mm-hmm. on the surface. But when you get down into the bedrock a ways, why, it's colors. That is it. You can see the formation and the way it's cutting across the dikes, and there's leading fissures, you know, that are crossing these dikes, and seems like they have a lot of branches on them. They run off up in the hill and
stringers, they're called,
and they just branch off like a branch of a tree, you know.
Stringers.
And there, and all blossom out, and there you could pick up pretty good placer gold in that. That is on the top stuff. Mm-hmm. And the top stuff is pretty much soft, and after you get down where it's good and hard, then you can see the real vein matter and how they run, and you can trace all these here little stringers that go off, and I've even followed them up for 150 feet or so, and then they seem to peter out and go into a finger all out, you know, and you can't follow them anymore, but there's quite a bit of gold in them. And if you take the over surface off, as far up on the hill like that, you might have a pretty good cleanup of it. I've been on the hill practically for the last 20 years, taking my gold off higher than anybody else, I guess, has ever been up. And yes, it's fair up almost to the top of the divide. But there's the wash runs out, you know.
Well, now, do you know, in your knowledge and experience, Ben, does gold come in what is known as a chimney, a fault,
Why, yes, there is such things like that, and I believe that that's what some of my outcroppings are, because
it's chimneys from volcanic beds.
Yes, it's just kind of a piped up, and I've crossed those things without hardly having time to do with them, you know, when you're doing your plaster work, and nobody does that, except I guess I'm the only one that does that. If I can see any gold in the rock, by then I would have investigated, but it's pretty hard to see gold in the top stuff, and in the rock it's hard to find it. But you can get it in small springers sometimes, and there's quite a few of those small springers, you know, they're cracked off in the off from the main lead, and that dike is mineralized all the way across country.
Well, now, Ben, what other creeks besides over there? Was you in Vault Creek and over here in these other creeks before?
Yes, I was on Vault Creek. I had a couple of claims up the head of Vault Creek, but we didn't find any gold there.
Well, you don't remember when Frank Masano and Spironi and these other Italian boys were working over in that Vault Creek district?
Well, was that... was that Conta?
Conta, yeah, and Bill Kulak?
Oh, yes. Yes, I wouldn't... I didn't know them very well because they had a big rich claim down there at the Forks.
Yeah, they told me about 30 days, three of them came in with $125,000 to Fairbanks, and they throwed around like water and went back broke.
Well, I don't know about that, but they spent their money pretty free, all right.
Oh, yes.
Nearly all them fellas, you know, spend money when they make money fast. They spend it fast, too, you know.
Well, that lake over in Vault Creek that flooded them out is drying up. It's drying up, and this year there's been some prospecting over there.
Yes.
Where they made those big strikes.
Yes.
In the early, around 1910 or 12.
Well, they're up on Treasure Creek, where the ground up there is pretty deep at the mouth. And it's wet. And it's hard to mine in placer. It just runs right down into the drift in the tunnel. You can hardly get away from the water, and it comes in there pretty fast. The last people that worked over there, they had a pretty good idea of getting a shaft down and getting the pump in the bottom by going out far enough away from the wet ground and sinking it in the permanent frost and down to the bedrock and then making a station for the pump and then driving a tunnel and lagging and crib it up to go into this wet ground where the rich pay was. And then the stuff that runs, you know, in sand and it comes down. And you've got to be sure that your pump is going to work. At least have two of them. And one goes on the goes out of business. You can have the other one to keep the water out. But it's dangerous.
Was you here when they stampeded over to Tenderfoot Creek?
Yes, I was here.
Well, there was about 4,000 people in there in that area one time.
Well, I couldn't say how many was there, but my brother went there, and I don't think there was that many when he went there. But he didn't stay out there. He came back down, and then they'd come back down in the spring of the year on a raft, and got drowned at him and his partner.
Well, I found an awful lot of houses and cabins over there. I went all through that flats, that whole 6-7 mile area. Oh, I walked all over it.
Oh, yes.
I walked down all through there. I found all kinds of stakes and places, shafts, where people worked.
Yes, oh, yes. Oh, yes, they worked 10 foot out, 10 foot creek, just one creek down there. And that was where McCarty made that strike up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was Dan McCarty's father. Mm-hmm. But the McCarty that I was talking about more was Dan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He was young, he was McCarty's son. But they had, his father had the rich claim over on Fairbanks Creek, and I guess Dan had part to do with it too. And Dan was over to the Lightgood country there and got in on a piece of ground. He bought some there, and they had a lease on one, but he got shot, you know, just about the time he was going to take over that creek that I'm on, at the lower end.
You actually come in here, what was it, 1904, Ben?
I come in here in the winter of 2 and 3.
2 and 3? Would you come by the way of Valdez?
No, I come out of the Glycoat country and come across overland and down the river.
But you had come in, where did you come in?
I come up the Tannenaw River.
Up the Tannenaw River?
Yeah, I crossed over from Rampart to Baker Creek, that's where Baker Creek
is. Well, then you come up through the Bering Sea.
When I went into the Glycoat, you know, I was a carpenter on a steamer that we built at Whitehorse, and I come down there and then I left the boat at Bettles.
Yeah, well, then you come down from Dawson, White Horse and Dawson.
Oh, well, yes, we come right through past Dawson in the spring. The first year I was in, I helped to build 3 new steamers there, and I did make a trip to Dawson, but I went out in fall and went to, it was not froze up yet then, but I went through to Caribou Crossing, where there was a man accompanying building scows there for the river. So I stayed there.
What was the name of that steamer you asked me last night?
Lavelle Young.
Lavelle Young. Would you have did you ever work on the Lavelle Young?
No, I know of it. Though.
Do you know if it's in existence today?
Well, it's possible. It could be laying up at White Horse. There's 3 or 4 old boats up there.
Now, they're moving those down to Dawson. They're going to put them on the beach at Dawson for a tourist attraction.
That's right. Well,
they're going to have 4 of them there.
Yeah, there's about that many. Mm-hmm. I know there is. There's about that many up there. I don't know what kind of shape they're in. They might be able to float them yet, you know.
Well, they're going to bring them down for tourist attraction.
Well, that would be quite an attraction. Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, I don't... I haven't been to Dawson for many years. And also White Horse. I've been over on the Yukon up there for a long time. I came down here. When I got here, I haven't went away from here. I've been staying right here. Been here alive and good and prospecting beyond life.
Do you remember Boas?
Who?
Followed the name of Boas that was born in Dyea. He went to school here with Frank Young in town.
Well, no, I don't think
he hadn't been back here since about 1913 or 14.
I might know him, but I wouldn't know him by name.
He sat here in the house and gave Frank Young and I a story one day.
Yes.
He was born in Dyea.
Well, I probably know him, but I don't know him by name. You know, a lot of people I wouldn't know by name. Lots of people I know them all right, don't know the name. There was a man met me on the street today. His name was Gutty. Gutty from he was a merchant in Chattanooga. Mm-hmm. And he's here yet. I think he was he was at the pioneer meeting last mm-hmm. time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I didn't know his name, and I didn't hardly know whether it was him or not. But I'd done business with him. I had bought a quarter of beef here when he was in store business here, but he's not in the store business anymore. He's retired. He had a brother that I knew pretty well because he was out prospecting on Muddle Creek when I first went on there. But he died here 3-4 years ago.
What can you tell me about Max Reedy?
Max Reedy?
When he come into there?
Well, I didn't know Max very well until he come to Fox, and then I got acquainted with him there. Mm-hmm. And he had that store at Fox. And then he got sick and he died here. I don't know.
I used to go out there and visit with him a lot.
Yeah, he was a fine man. Mm-hmm. Now, she'd get up in the middle of the night to give you gas or anything, you know. Mm-hmm. That's something a lot of people wouldn't do when he went by there. I just happened to be, forget the gas up in the car, and I got over there and stopped at the store, and they heard me coming in, and it was in the middle of the night, you know, in summertime, so he looked out and he said, "I'll be down there in a minute." And I said, "Fine." I said, "You know, I should have got my gas in Fairbanks, but then all I picked up and ran on over." Oh, I know quite a lot of old timers, you know, but I just can't think of who they are right now.
You know, I've seen your place out there, Ben, but I don't believe I ever drove into your place. I've been all over that live and good country there.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you where you can, or how easy it is to find it. When you cross the big bridge, Tolovana Bridge, yeah, and you go down the road till you start to climb over that hill, and Olive Creek is on your left-hand side before you turn up on the hill. And then you go up over the hill, and when you come down, you'll make a kind of an oxbow bend in the head of my creek being there. That's where I am, and I have that granite run right there. The road cut me off of going any further on that quartz beam.
Oh.
I had that, the road cut me off there, and then I was stopped. But I still creep out that bottom. I'm about 15 feet down in the bedrock from the top of bedrock, and I had done that mostly with the bulldozer and the water. Mm. But now I can't do any more. But every spring, water runs down there and sloughs that there bottom all off, full of gravel, and I have to clean it off if I want to see or just try out a little more. I have some small iron boxes there, you know, that are. They were built just for testing ore or something like that, or sluicing the top stuff. And I shovel them in with this talc and everything, this talc that you talk about. Mm. Well, this talc is always alongside of a seam or a vein. Mm. And it goes down alongside of it. It's just like the walls were rotten like that, and they made a lot of talc, you know. Mm-hmm. And you find that going right down alongside your your vein. Now, it happened to be that I took the bulldozer and went down into it because it was quite soft. You could lift it out, and I was dumping it down low, and I come across the vein that carried the gold, you know. And it was only a small thing, too. It was maybe about this wide, but then it come down a little narrow, and then it had the country rock that was in and out a little bit, and it had pretty good gold in it. But, you know, it was so fine that I just shoveled this all into the box, you know, and then turned the water into it and let this here talc and stuff wash off as it give it time. By the time I think, well, I'd better go up there and fill it up again, it would be all cleaned out of the boxes, and I'd begin to see the gold in the box, you see. And that's the way I panned it too, and I come to the black arsenic, but I'm not sure whether it's arsenic or whether it might be cyanide, or what they call selenite. It's more valuable than gold, you know. Very valuable. So I had a book on that thing, and I thought I'd test that, but I never got around to it. So this black stuff, you get a whole pan full of it sometimes, and sometimes it kind of pinches out on you. Mm. And the ore is all sugar. It's all sugar ore down there, all kind of crushed up.
Fine.
Well, that's what I was shoving in the boxes. And then two times I filled up these boxes and let it wash out. And then I thought I'd see what I had in the gold pan. I took it up and washed it into the pan, and I got a little over half an ounce. And I thought I'd test it some more. Well, I took the bulldozer and went deeper on it, and this seam still goes down, you know. But I'm right up against the road, and every time there's a rain come down, it fills it up again. If I haven't got time to do with it, and I have to take the bulldozer over to the other creek, and then I haven't got it there.
Well, who else is mining over there besides you, Ben? Who else lives over there in your district?
Mining over there with me?
Yeah, in your area.
Well, Hattinger's the only one that has been mining over there. Carr's moving back there.
Well, is he going to work on that ground, Carl?
Carr Parker? Carr's moving back this spring. He's due on Easter Creek where he had that lease over there. Mm-hmm. He's moving back to his own ground on Olive Creek.
Well, he owns that over in Olive Creek.
Yes, he really owns that. He's worked out all that creek clear down since they took it over.
Has he been getting a good showing?
Well, they did have very rich ground there for a while. But now it's low grade, but I think he's going to work there for a couple blocks of ground anyway.
Did you ever go around Gnome Creek?
Oh, yes.
Over in there? Where they left that dredge setting? There's no dredge setting.
On this Gnome Creek?
Gnome Creek.
Oh, Gnome. Well, yes, I went over there the first summer, 1903, and I went out. We crossed Gnome Creek there, and we come to a cabin that old Cap Anderson had built, and we stopped there and camped there that night. And my partner and I, we had a horse, you know, and his dog barked, and we thought somebody was around there. And finally, we spotted the cat and went over there, and he was an old man with red whiskers way down to here. And he was so curious, he says, "Now," he says, I believe you're lost, he says. No, we said we wasn't lost, but we were out on the prospect trip. And we talked to him about all the gold that was around there at that time, but we didn't stay on the creek. But you could pan colors of Gnome River anywhere all around, you know.
I even went grayling fishing over there.
Yeah, it's great fishing.
But that dredge is still sitting over there about 5 miles down from the road.
It is?
Yeah, I walked all over it. Well, I got pictures of it.
Is it an iron dredge?
Yes, it's a metal boat.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. But they've robbed all the machinery putting it off of it.
Oh, I see. Yes. Well, sir, you know, I couldn't have bought a dredge for myself one time, as was doing the war in 1942, I was on a number up here for the government for that Delta Bridge up there to let the army trucks get through when the water come. And I was just about through there, saw a number when they finished the bridge. And I was over at the roadhouse, and I met this here Holbrook's brother, the one that promoted the dredge. And I don't know if he promoted that dredge or not. But he had to do with two or three dredges that I know of, that's the older brother. Mm. And the younger brother, we got to talking there in the roadhouse, And he was talking about a dredge, and he said, you can buy a dredge up here in 40 Mile Country, he says, for $10,000. I says, they sold it, you know, the NC company sold it, and they own it. He says, you can get the smallest one from the NC company for $10,000. Well, I thought that's a pretty good bargain. Mm-hmm. And I could buy that dredge. So when I got down, I went right to the NC company. And I couldn't think how it was. I noticed there was one man sitting in there when we were talking about it. He was sitting like I was here, and we were over there, and we was talking about that dredge. Everything was all right on it so far. That was one of the whole ropes, dredges that was up there. Mm-hmm. There were two of them, the small one I was going to get. But you know, this party that was sitting over here, he was eavesdropping on this conversation. I never thought, you know. But when I got down here to Fairbanks, I went right to the MC company. And I said, I understand that you have that you own a dredge up there that you sold or foreclosed on, and for sale for $10,000. He said, we just sold it yesterday, Ben. Well, I figured...
Somebody heard you.
I figured that fella typed that off, and I don't know who got the dredge. I never did. I thought it was Miskovich.
They could have, yes.
Well, it was a man, a Slavonian, that was sitting there listening to that talk of mine. I wouldn't mention his name, but I'm pretty sure that I would have had that dredge moved over there to Wilberfitt. And if it would work fine, because the shallow ground out there, and it's wet ground too. I know the gold came out of Wilberfitt and was down there in the mouth of, around the flat, so I had a couple of claims there that I thought would be pretty good digging. And I think so yet too. But I haven't got around. I put a hole down there, but I didn't get the bedrock. It's wet, you know. But I would get a 5 cent pen, and I was pretty glad to get that much. And I didn't even get the bedrock. I couldn't reach bedrock. Too much water, you see. But the hole was frozen on top a ways so that it didn't fall in on me. It was the winter time, you know. But now, here's a dredge over in Lyme, but you know, it got away from there and it sold for $160,000. Why, a few of us miners would put our money together, we could have that dredge and have the whole
work the whole valley.
We would have the whole valley. And, you know, but then on the other hand, the FE company, I think, wanted that dredge pretty bad. It was brand new and it was run by a diesel engine. Mm-hmm. And then everything complete, you know. And I think if we'd been bidding on it or anybody else been bidding on it, they'd have raised it up to $500,000 so we couldn't touch it, you know.
But you're still working with your cat, and alone, you still come out to make a living.
Well, I tell you that the reason that I have to do it is because the wages were too high for me. I had a couple of men working one summer, and then they drawing $700 a month, and I was even putting the board in with it, so they had more money when I cleaned up in the fall than I had after finishing the whole mine and everything else.
Well, yeah, and the machinery.
So, I had the machinery there and the equipment all there, boxes all there, everything, pumps, and I thought, well, I'll just go at it and run the pump, and I'll muck off all this here muck and stay with it till it comes near fall, and I'll take the bulldozer and clean it up and push it in and get off and sluice it up and do it over and over again like that till I could clean up the bedrock. And that way I was getting around about $5,000 worth. So I figured this was pretty near as much as an ordinary man could work all year round. And I could do this in 4 months. I thought that was better than hiring a help with that and having half of the money go to somebody else.
It cost something to fuel your... how much do you have to put out in a year to supply the fuel?
Well, that doesn't take so very much, not when you're not running steady, you know. And the little bulldozer that I have is a 6 long. The Army took all the big ones away that I had before, and I never got a chance to buy any of them back. When they put them up for sale, everything was sold in 2.5 hours, and I wasn't here. But then when I didn't want a bulldozer, I had to buy this one. I got the chance to go, and I got now. And the war wasn't over. They were still pretty busy here, but they didn't know about this one. It was sent off from the Kaiko country. It was then belonged to McGee.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Monk McGee at that time. But Dan Lehman was at the office down here, and he was running that part of it. So I owed the company a little money at the time, because I had bought that Caterpillar bulldozer that I had from the NC company, and I hadn't a chance to pay for it all, but I'd paid for over half of it, and I'd paid the interest on it, and I owed this some more money on it. But I got this other one from Dan, unbeknown to George, and George was Preston was the president of the company, you know, and I asked him, I said, do you think I could get a hold of another bulldozer anywhere? No, Ben, he says, we can't do any more for you, you know, or at least he says, we can't carry any more. Well, I says, I owe you quite a bit of money, I says, and I've been running picked off. I've been washing them down and get quite a bit of bedrock ready for to clean up. I said, if I could only get another dozer, I could pay you all the money I owe you. Well, he says, I'm afraid, he says, but I said, so far it's in the ground. Well, he says, maybe it'll always be in the ground then. And I said, I think you're turning me down for the last time. Well, he says, we can't help it. He says, we've got to look out for ourselves and so forth. Well, I went over to Dan, and I was sort of talk to him about it, see what he could find. And he said, there's a six, number six Caterpillar dozer. Just come up to the kayak, because black steamer, he says, I don't know what kind of shape it's out there. He says, well, look at it. It's for sale, he says. And I says, well, I'd go out and take a look at it. And I said, of course, I can see it looks all right. And I said, what do you want for it? $3,500. Well, I said, that ain't too much, but I said, you've got to have the cash money for it. Yes. I've got it. I said, would you rent it? Yes. He says, we could rent it to you. Well, I said, that's fine. And I said, if I can rent it, I said, what do you want for rent for? He says, about $5 an hour. I said, that's all right. I said, that's fine. Everything was fine as long as I could get a hold of something, you know. Mm-hmm. Have this ground about 30,000 feet to clean up. So he says, all right. He says, you come in this afternoon about 2 o'clock. He says, well, I'll have the papers and you can sign them. Well, I started back to the Nordale where I was stopping, and I was thought, no, I wonder if he'd give me an option on that, if I could pay for it for 30 days, you know, not for long. I turned back and I said, well, Dan, I said, would you give me an option on that bulldozer? I said, for 30 days? Yes. He says, we can put that in the papers, Dan. Well, that's fine. I said, right, that's fine. And he asked me, he said, how much money I had to pay down in advance to take the machine. I said, well, I said, I haven't got only a few hundred dollars in the bank. You can have that. He says, you'll need that, he says, to buy fuel and get it out there. Well, I said, I do. I know that. I need it. I said, maybe I can borrow it from Peter to pay Paul and get it anyway. Well, we signed up in the papers on that, and I know George Preston wasn't aware of it. I mean, say he didn't know about it. But when the papers signed up, it was mine. The condition was mine. Couldn't get away from that. And it was only about 4 days after I got it out there that I was mining, and I broke the piston on one side of the lift, you know, that on the eye broke out there, and I couldn't fix it out there, so I took it off and put it in my car, and I was into town here to get it welded. And I was still working for the Army, you know, and I went to the NC company shop to see if I could get it welded. They were just coming out at 5 o'clock, and everybody said, let's work the welder in here. He's just coming there now. Well, I said, you're the welder? Yes, sir. Right here in the buggy, I had the car right there at the door. I said, you know, I got a piston there, and I said, that eye broke off. I said, I thought I could get you to weld it. No, he said, we got all the work we can do. He said, work for the Army. He said, we've got no time for anybody else. And I said, that was not very much of a job, but I said, I'll give you $5. I said, if you'll stick that there and throw it outside the door so that I can get it in the morning before you go to work. He took $5, and the thing was thrown outside the door, you know. And I got it before they went to work and put it in my rig and it was gone. Well, you see, before I left there, I had been 4 days sleuthing. And I had a man do the Nordic for me. But I didn't leave the golden box because I cleaned it up. And I had $4,500 of that money. And I knew I could own this dozer anytime I wanted, but I didn't take time to bother. I wanted to do some more sleuthing before I paid the price. I had 15 or 20 days. that month anyhow. So I heard it back, and we got going again. And we run for 6 days. And it had my plenty of water in it, too much water, and I had to go up the ditch to turn some out. So Albert was nozzling the dirt into the boxes, and after we got it all cleaned up, he thought he'd go down to the camp and get a drink or a cigarette or whatever he wanted. But he was coming back, and he let the water run through the boxes, all the nozzle and the sluice head beside him. Well, this kind of scared me. I said, you know, you shouldn't have let that water go through the boxes. I says, all of them, like that when I wasn't here. Well, he didn't kind of like the way I talked to him. He says, if I don't suit you, he says, I can quit. Oh, I said, your work is all right, you know. But I said, all the miners in the country here will tell you that you lose your gold if you let too much water run race through them boxes like that, without any dirt going in. I was curious about it, and I said, well, turn the water off the ditch, and then I'll clean them up. I'll see whether there's any gold. But when we turned the water off, you know, you couldn't see a color. Not a color anywhere. And 6 days went on there, and I'd done pretty good before. I know it felt pretty good. Well, I thought, you know, the gold was really gone, or lost something. Couldn't be. When I start to take up the reference, you know, the gold was way down at the bottom. That's what put it down. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, they can talk about water going through boxes, must be like, I approve it this way now, I know better. You can't hurt it, so. Well, I cleaned up $6,000 more. And I felt so happy about it, I said, I'll go in and I'll pay for this gold bulldozer and pay the company all what I owe, and I'll be all to the good. I'll have money to the good, and I can back and do some more. But we didn't have much more time. But it gets pretty close up, and that time was just about the latter part of September, you know. So, this is the time I go into the NC company, you know, with this Polk. I don't know if you were in there.
I think I seen that caterpillar come up black bringing up river because I was working on the pile driver in the man when he come by.
That's the one.
See, I worked on the docks there with the two pile driver crews for the railroad.
Yeah.
I seen them go by.
When I took that Polk down there and the next morning I thought the bank was open, but I was mistaken. I went on then through the NC company, and you know, George and Mead was there as credit manager, and these offices were way at the back of the building. So I went back in there, and I had this poke, you know, under my arm, and it was wrapped in a canvas. You wouldn't know it was a poke because I didn't want the people to be seeing it anyway. So I went back in there, and George and Mr. Mead was there at the desk. George sat in a big swivel chair, and Mead had another one right close to one another. And Mead was a pretty nice fellow, and we always like, know how it's getting along. He said, hello, Ben. He said, how's it going? Oh, I said, it's going fine now. I tell you, I said, you make out the bill, I says, for all what I owe you, I says, and in a half an hour this will be in the bank, and you can cash your check. Well, that's fine, Ben. He says, how much you got there? I handed him over the poke. I know he never had any idea what gold weighed. It was just a job he had there. But George, he was never looked up until he heard us talking. And Meat says, handed the poke over to George, you know. And George was sitting in this here swivel chair. And he reached up like this, like it was going to be a light poke or something, and it slammed it down to the carpet on the floor, you know. He couldn't hold it. And then, you know, he had the Scotch brogue, and he says, well, Bun, I'm bloody with the money. I said, I am too. I said, I'm glad I could pay you what I owe you. I said, I think you turned me down for the last time. And unbeknown to Preston that Dan made this deal with me. Well, he done whatever wanted to do. He was aged first anyway.
Yeah. Well, George Preston used to sit in that swivel chair for many years there.
Oh, sure, he was.
Every time I ever come in NC, he was sitting back in that swivel chair.
Yes, and I knowed him when he first come in to work for the, I don't know if it was the NC or what company yet, but Johnny Healy was there early too. He was an NC man. But Barnett, you see, they sold out to the NC. Or what did the NC at that time?
No, it was Alaska Trading.
Yeah, something like that.
And then there was Chattanooga Trading. It was another company. Remember
yeah.
They coming here too?
Oh, there was an NAT company.
NAT, yes.
And then the NT company, you know, I met Rodney Richmond down at Butler's when he was running that store when I went in on that Kaikuk boat and left the boat up there, and I had to go and buy an outfit from the store. And you know, we shipped a big lot of bacon on the fresh bacon in on that boat.
Did you find anything in the Kaikuk then?
Well, we found way up on Emmerich there. There wasn't anybody else at that time, but they had staked it. But we went on up, and we were right up in the head of that gulch, you know, and we were digging into it. The fellows with me. We got a little piece of gold that was, it was just like you'd taken this lead paper. Mm-hmm. And 4 or 5 layers of it, about as big as a half dollar, and it seemed like it was jammed right into a crack, and we spotted that thing out there, and we took it out, and it's just all in leaves, you know, one in
fact. Big gold, yeah, I've seen that in Arizona.
And, yeah.
I've seen flake gold in
leaves. That's all what we found. We couldn't find anything else.
I've seen a mountain of flake gold down in Arizona.
Yes.
It's out of Prescott, about 5 miles, and nobody will mine it, but here's a whole mountain of it.
Yes.
And you can see it, the rock is shot with it.
That's right.
But it's so fine that putting it through the smelter, it goes away.
Oh, is that right?
They couldn't save it in those years when I was down.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting towards the end of the tape, Ben.
Oh, yes.
So this is a visit with Ben Falls on an evening up here at my home in 215-6, and this is Harry Hughes. And I'm recording just a little visit here about mining from Ben on the Pioneer Record tapes. And this is March the 28th, 1962.